Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and start.
Okay.
Anybody's on or not, whatever.
Everybody's on.
So, whatever. Well. Till after the forum, we're going to stick around with Jeremiah for a while, at least. And I think we've made the point that when you have the phrase, the word of Jehovah was with somebody, that he actually was with them and spoke to them. And it says that he spoke to them in the context where we've been. So that's what brought us back to Jeremiah. And then we've spent quite a bit of time looking at the New Covenant with Israel in Jeremiah and made some contrasts with the New Testament. So I don't know that that helped me choose what I was doing for the forum, but it's what I am doing anyway. And so that's where we're going to be working this morning, and back in Jeremiah again. And in our last studies in Jeremiah, after we took a little hiatus looking around the events dealing with the crucifixion and resurrection of the Lord, we were in Jeremiah 36 and before, but Jeremiah doesn't do things chronologically always, and so he inserts some steps back in time to the days of Jehoiakim, who was a king of Judah. And when Jehoiakim dies, he puts his son, takes the throne. And this is this fellow Kaniah, Jeconiah, that we'll notice again as we move into our study. But Jeconiah are his names, or Jehoiachin. He goes by three names. And Jehoiachin, this fellow, he's going to be removed after a short, very brief reign of just about 3 months or so. He's going to be taken off to Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar appoints his uncle, Jehoiakim's brother, to the throne. And so we'll go back and look at that by way of review of that as we move into our study this morning. You have this fellow Zedekiah. And when we come into chapters 37, we did look at 37 last, but 37 through 52, through the end of the book, he does deal with Zedekiah and Zedekiah's reign. So we're just kind of surveying through some of this material. And so that's where we'll pick up today, moving on from chapter 37 into 38. But we'll pick up our background again in 37:1, and then look at verse 6. So let's go ahead and look to the Lord, and we'll begin. Father, we're grateful for yourself. We're thankful that we do have a relationship to you, and you relate to us, and that you've provided us salvation through your Son. And that today, and in these days, we have a unique relationship to all three persons of the Godhead. That was something that was unknown and unavailable during the days when Jeremiah and the other prophets wrote. And yet we're thankful that you have provided better things for us through your Son. And as we look into your word this morning, might the Spirit guide our thoughts as we look into some of these things. It's not something we practice, but it is something that's here for our learning, and we're grateful for it. Amen. Okay, we want to look at verse 1 once more of chapter 37. It says we left Jehoiakim off in the previous chapter in verse 30, in chapter 36. And Jehoiakim destroyed the scroll that Baruch the scribe wrote as Jeremiah spoke the words to him, and he cut it up and threw it in the fire. So Jeremiah had to go through this all over again with Baruch, and he had to rewrite. He had to add some things to it. But in 37:1 it says, "And King Zedekiah the son of Josiah reigned instead of Kaniah the son of Jehoiakim, who Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, made king in the land of Judah." And so that's where we left off. And that's we pick up the context here with Zedekiah once more. And then down in verse 6, we see the background for what we're dealing with, and that is, then was the word, and remember the word came is just a, to be a verb, hayah, and so the word, then was the word of Jehovah unto the prophet Jeremiah, saying. And so there was an appearance, a personal appearance of the pre-incarnate Son of God as he spoke to Jeremiah, the prophet, and he speaks to him and he gives him the words concerning what will take place in the future. Now I want to take one moment and go back to the Second Kings again, just to remind ourselves of this, of the events that take place at this point in time back in Jeremiah. But back in the Kings, we do have the account of Nebuchadnezzar coming up in the days of Jehoiakim in chapter 24 of 2 Kings in verse 1. And then it moves on. Jehoiakim dies in verse 6. And then you have the king of Babel, Egypt, didn't come anymore. But then you have Jehoiachin in verse 8. Now Jehoiachin, remember, Jehoiachin also goes by Jeconiah and by Kaniah. And so we see all three names used of this king. He was only 18 when he began to reign, and so he was a young fellow as he took his father's throne. But he did evil in the sight of Jehovah. We're told that in verse 9, as so many of these kings did. And he did evil in the sight of Jehovah, just as his father had done. And so Nebuchadnezzar does take him away and carries off the valuable things in the temple. And so all of this takes place, and he's taken in verse 15 to Babylon along with his mother and the other officers of the officials in his court. And he carried all of these people, their craftsmen and other important people, down through verse 16. Now, verse 17 is where I wanted to pick up before we move on back to chapter 38 of Jeremiah. But it tells us that Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign. And in verse 18, but notice I skipped verse 17, which I intended to read. And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother, that is Jehoiachin, Kaniah, Jeconiah, his father's brother. So his uncle becomes king in his stead and changed his name to Zedekiah. And so originally his name was Mattaniah, but now it's Zedekiah, as his name has changed. He was only 3 years older than Kaniah was when Kaniah took over the throne of his father and is for his very short reign. And we see that back here, the account, a summary of what we'll see and what we are seeing in Jeremiah, because in verse 19 it tells us, and he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, according to all that Jehoiakim, his brother, had done. And so his brother Jehoiakim did evil, so did Zedekiah. And for through the anger of Jehovah it came to pass in Jerusalem that Judah, until he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. Now keep that in mind. He rebelled against the king of Babylon. And that's going to, now we're going to move over to Jeremiah chapter 38. Now, already before the hiatus going back into Jehoiakim's reign again, we've seen Zedekiah in the context of Jeremiah already. And he did things, he abused poor Jeremiah. He was in prison, but we're going to pick up at a time here before he's in prison. We can see some things, but he's going to end up in prison, though. And he had been free to come and go. We see that over in 37:4. So by the context, this is before he becomes incarcerated. And so in 37:4 it says, now Jeremiah came in and went out among the people, for they had not put him into prison. And so he is free to come and go. Now when you move on over to chapter 38 then, we're going to see there's an attempt to kill Jeremiah. And so there's going to be an attempt by some of the officials to kill him. And they're going to work over this king, Zedekiah, who's really a weak-kneed king. He has no backbone, and we'll see that he's going to cave to the officials of the southern kingdom as they come to him. Now, the first thing that we'll notice in verses 1 through 3, is that they hear what Jeremiah's been saying to the people. And so as they hear what he's saying to the people, it's going to have an effect upon them. They're not going to like it, and so they're going to react to it. And as they react to it, they're going to go to the king and report what Jeremiah's been saying, and they want to have him executed. And so let's begin in verse 1, where they hear the report, and we see the officials who are identified here. Now, a couple of these names have popped up before. And so you have Shephatiah, the son of Mattan, and Gedaliah, the son of Pashur. We've seen this Pashur before. And Jukal, the son of Shelemiah, and Pashur, the son of Malchiah. Actually, as you look at the son of Malchiah here, we've seen both Jukal and Pashur in previous passages. And so these men have done some things before involved with Jeremiah. But they heard the words, and so you have these four men who heard the words that Jeremiah had spoken unto all the people, saying. Now when Jeremiah speaks, Jehovah had himself, the pre-incarnate Son of God, had spoken to Jeremiah and told him these words. And so now Jeremiah reports what Jehovah has said to him. So it said, "Thus saith the Lord." And so this is the prophecy concerning those who remained in the city and those who went to Babylon. And so they had that opportunity. They could go to Babylon and survive, or they could stay in the city and they would be destroyed. And he gives three ways that they could die. And so he says, "Thus saith Jehovah, he that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence." And so Jeremiah has spoken of this destruction in previous contexts. We won't go back to look at all of these, but we have seen that they could die by the sword in battle or just in slaughter, and they could die by famine, and food was running short. We'll notice that a little bit later in the previous chapter at the end. But also it goes on by the pestilence. And so when there's famine, there was going to be followed by pestilence. "But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans," that is, goes to Babylon, "shall live." And so you stay here, you're going to die. But if you go to the Chaldeans, if you go with Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon, you will live. "For he shall have his life, his nephesh, for a prey, and shall live." And so they'll be taken captive, but they would live in captivity. But if you stick around, you're going to die. Now, that's going to have an effect upon Zedekiah also. And you're going to have something similar told to Zedekiah a little bit later on. And so these men, Jeremiah has been speaking these things, and this is what they have heard. And so now you have the prophecy concerning the fall of Babylon. "Thus saith Jehovah," again in verse 3, "this city shall surely be given into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall take it." And so the city's going. If they stay, the city is going to go. If they go, the city is going to be taken. Either way, Nebuchadnezzar and his armies, they're going to come and they're going to take over the city of Jerusalem. Now, as we come to the fourth verse, you have the request by the officials to have Jeremiah put to death. And you have the request given, therefore, they're called princes. But these would be the officials here in the southern kingdom. "They said unto the king," that is to Zedekiah, "we beseech thee, let this man be put to death." And so their request is pretty clear, pretty forthright: let him be put to death. And so execute him, get rid of him. And they give their reasoning for doing so. And really, these reasons, they might have had some grounds, but they really are pretty phony when you look at them, why he should be put to death. For thus he weakeneth the hands of the men of war. And so, and notice it says that remain in this city. Now, before this, they've had many men carried off to Babylon when Jeconiah was carried away. And so they already are short-handed, but there were some men of war who were still in the city. And so he says, and so these are the ones that remain anyway in the city. He's weakening their hands. They're getting kind of feeble in the hands of all the people then, not just for the the soldiers, but also for the rest of the people. And so he's weakening them, and the reason is by speaking such words unto them. And so when you tell them you're going to be taken into captivity, you can go into captivity and live, or you can stay here and die, well, that's kind of lowering their morale, so the morale isn't very good. And he says, for this man seeketh not the welfare of this people. He doesn't seek the peace of this people, but the hurt. And so he blames all that's going on, the hurt that's the anticipation of what will take place. He's blaming the lack of morale, we could say anyway, upon Jeremiah for speaking the words of Jehovah to them. And so again, as so often is the case, the prophet represented Jehovah and spoke for Jehovah, but he gets the credit for it and he gets the abuse for it, for what is said. And so this is the reason why these four men went to King Zedekiah and asked him to have him put to death. Now notice how weak this king is, though. If he was a strong king, he could stand up and say, no, we'll listen to what Jeremiah says, we'll take it into account. But instead, notice when we come down to verse 5, the king allows them to do what they want with Jeremiah, and so he just hands them over, and that's what we see here. Then Zedekiah the king said, behold, he is in your hand, for the king is not he that can do a thing. He can't do a word against you. So you notice how he really is vacillating. He really won't take a stand. He just really is a weak-kneed king. And so he can't do anything to withstand against these officials. And so he's the leader. He's the honcho, but yet he can't do anything against them. Then we come to verse 6, and they're going to, and you have Jeremiah's sentencing here his sentence to death. It's a death sentence that he gets when he says you can do whatever you want to do to him. So they're going to cast him into a pit because he's supposedly destroying the morale of the people. Now, one thing I did want to say earlier before I move off the point, you stay, you go, you live. You stay, you die. Now, that's the potential and the actual. And there was a potential. There was a potential for the people to leave and to live, or there was the potential that they could just say, we'll stay here and stay, and they would die. And so that was the choice they had. It was a choice put before them, but you do have the potential and the actual, and when it comes down to it, we'll see what happened to most of the people. And so as we move into the sixth verse, though, here's where Jeremiah's sentence is going to be carried out. And as they do, they take him, and so they then took the Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon, it says. And so when it says they cast him into the dungeon, the word dungeon here is just the word, it's a bore, it's a word for a pit, a cistern. And so they cast him down into this cistern, and it was with the intent that he would die. And so he's going down there to die. They put him there, and like I say, it was a death sentence given to him. So they cast him into the cistern, the dungeon, it says, of Malchiah, the son of Hamelech, that was in the court of the prison, or the court of the guard. And so they would oftentimes use these old cisterns to put prisoners in and use them kind of as a prison. But he's lowered down, and they let him down, let Jeremiah down with cords. And in the pit, or the cistern, there was no water but mire. So he's down in the mud, and the mire is just plain. He's down in the mud, and that's where he's dropped to spend the rest of his days. And that's their intent. And notice, he's sunk in the mud. So it wasn't a very comfortable thing for Jeremiah. It's a very inconvenient thing, as he's sinking down in mud, down at the bottom of a pit, no water to drink and no food. And so their intent is that he will starve down in the bottom of the pit. Now, God wasn't through with Jeremiah yet. The intent of the officials was to get rid of the prophet Jeremiah, because he had spoken, given Jehovah's word, that the city of Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, and those who were there were going to die by the sword, anyway, and that was they didn't like what he had to say, so they just get rid of the prophet. Now, it wasn't going to stop what happened, but God wasn't through with Jeremiah, so God, by an unusual source, does provide for Jeremiah's rescue out from this cistern. And it comes at the hands of an Ethiopian eunuch, who was one of the eunuchs in the king's house. What he did there, we don't know. He may have ministered with the many wives and women the king had, but whatever, he was in the king's house, and he hears what they've done to Jeremiah. Now, this man was not a Jew, but he must have understood something of what was going on within Israel, and realized that Jeremiah was not a bad guy. And so he wasn't the bad guy. So he sets it up, and he goes to the king. But you have the intervention of this fellow, and we do know his name even today because of his rescuing Jeremiah. And so he intervenes as he goes to the king to appeal to the king in verses 7 through 9. And he visits the king upon hearing that Jeremiah has been put into this cistern. And so verse 7 we pick up, it says, "Now when Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs which was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon," or in the cistern, this pit, "the king then sitting in the gate of Benjamin." Now it's kind of interesting. The king is away from home. He's at one of the gates of the city, and he's at apparently a good observation point. Now remember, the Babylonians, they have come, and they will come, and they're going to take the city. And he's heard that. He knows that this is what's likely to take place. And so he's in a good observation place. I don't know what he's there, probably observing for the Babylonians to come. But he's up at a place where he can watch away from home. And when Ebed-Melech hears what they've done to Jeremiah. So going on to verse 8, he goes, leaves the king's house, this eunuch does, "And Ebed-Melech went forth out of the king's house and spake to the king, saying..." And so now he's going to report to the king what they've done. He says, "My lord the king, these men have done evil." And when they've done evil, they've done something that's very calamitous evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet. So he does recognize Jeremiah as a prophet and a prophet of Jehovah. And so he sees what they've done. They've done evil to him. And he goes on, "whom they cast into the cistern," or the pit. And he is like to die, or he will die, literally. He will die for hunger in the place where he is, for there is no more bread in the city. And so there's no food in the city, and Jeremiah's down in the pit, so he can't go outside of the city and find food. He has no resources there. And we see that at the end of chapter 37, in the 21st verse, that King Zedekiah commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison. And so he was in the court of the prison already. And that they should give him daily a piece, just a round of bread out of the baker's street until all the bread in the city were spent. And so there is no bread in the city, but now he's put where there are no resources for food, and thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. So that sets us up to where he is already, but now they throw him down into the cistern, into the pit. And so as he goes into the pit, he's put there to die. And so that was the death sentence. They said, they asked the king, these four men asked the king to put Jeremiah to death because of his prophecy, because it was ruining the morale of those in the city. And so that's the story that we see at this point. Now, Zedekiah, he's going to give this eunuch, Ebed-Melech, he's going to give him permission and instruction to deliver Jeremiah out of the cistern, out of the pit now. So he's very vacillating, like I said. The first place, he caves into the four officials. Instead of standing up and doing what was right with Jeremiah, he lets them throw him into the cistern, so he'll die. And now he turns around and lets this eunuch deliver him from the pit. And so you have a command, and we'll go down through verse 13 as we continue with this man. And so he says, Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, take from hence 30 men with thee, and take up Jeremiah the prophet out from the pit, the cistern, before he die. So now he's going to change and let Jeremiah be rescued. And like I say, God wasn't through with Jeremiah yet. And so God is going to deliver him out of the pit where they put him to die. Now it's kind of interesting. They do have there is a problem in reading 30 men. Some texts will read three men. Some read three. It's a little different understanding. So whether it's three or 30 men, three men, I suppose three men could lift Jeremiah out of the pit. But at the same time, when you understand, there were four men who had Jeremiah cast in and dropped him into the pit with their cords, with their ropes. They dropped him into the pit. You have four men who aren't going to appreciate Jeremiah being delivered. So there could have been 30 men who went down with Ebed-Melech to draw Jeremiah out of the pit. Not that it is going to change anything here, except that how many men went. Did they go as a little small army to defend and to bring Jeremiah safely out of the pit and rescue him and ward off the four men and their cohorts or what? I'm not sure. But anyway, they are to get him out before he dies. And so the eunuch does exactly what he was told to do. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury. That would be under the storehouse. Now you have some old English here. And took thence old cast clouts and old rotten rags. Well, what he did was he took old ragged clothes, and that's what it was, just ragged old clothes and ragged old rotten rags. But he took them out from the storehouse and took them. And why he puts this in here, I'm sure it had to do with just making it easier on Jeremiah to get him out of the pit. So you have the account of him going in, and we're in Jeremiah 38. And so and Ebed-Melech, in verse 12, said unto Jeremiah, he let them down by cords unto Jeremiah. I didn't finish that off, into the pit. And Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian said unto Jeremiah, put now these old cast clouts, these old clothes, and these rotten rags, but just these old rags and things. He says, put these and old rags under your armholes, under the cords. And so he wraps them around the cords and around his armpits and his armholes. Anyway, that has to be for the comfort of Jeremiah, and he Jeremiah did so. And so he's rescued in verse 13. So they drew up Jeremiah with cords and took him up out of the pit. And so they brought him out of the pit, the cistern. The word dungeon is just a deep pit, a cistern kind of a thing. And Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison, or in the court of the guards there, as he was rescued. And so he's free from the pit, but he's still where he was, in the court of the prison or the court of the guards. So he's still a prisoner at this point, and he will be. But he is, anyway, he's been delivered and rescued. Now, as we come to the 14th verse down through 23, you have this discussion between Zedekiah and Jeremiah that takes place. And so Zedekiah, he sets up a meeting with Jeremiah, bringing him out of the prison. But he meets him at the third entrance of the temple. And so we'll just pick up in verse 14. Then Zedekiah the king sent and took Jeremiah the prophet unto him into the third entry, that is in the house of Jehovah. So he took him to the third entrance. We're not sure exactly where what it's being spoken of here as to the third entrance for sure, but it's one of the entrances of the temple. And he does this. He kind of does it. We'll see. He does it on the sly. He's the king, but he does it in secret, kind of. He's going to do this all in secret with Jeremiah. And the king said unto Jeremiah, I will ask thee a thing, hide nothing from me. So you don't hold anything back, Jeremiah. You tell me everything. You lay it on the line. Now, Jeremiah's been out speaking before the people. That's why he was in prison. He's told them what Jehovah's going to do. And so as he's told him that, Zedekiah, he's heard some of these things, but now he wants to hear it from Jeremiah himself. And so Jeremiah is going to rehearse to Jeremiah the words that Jehovah has spoken in the past concerning the city of Jerusalem and its coming fall to Babylon. But as you look at verse 15, Jeremiah, he's going to get his words in, and he's going to try to preserve himself and protect himself, because he knows that this is a weak king, and the weak king, he may just respond and have him cast back into the cistern for all he knows. And so Jeremiah says, if I declare it unto you, will you not surely put me to death? If I tell you, because the officials wanted him dead because of what he said, he suffered a lot. And as we've gone through a lot of Zechariah previously, we've seen many things that Zechariah's had to do, things that were not just uncomfortable, but things that did put him in danger. He suffered a great deal. And so there's this possibility then, and in his mind probably a probability that Zedekiah is going to turn and cast him back into the pit. And so he says, and if I give thee counsel, will you not hearken unto me? Now Zedekiah gives him his word, and notice he does it, though it's a secret. This whole thing is done kind of on the sly. It's not done where the people see it, nor where the officials who wanted Jeremiah dead would see it. And so it's all kind of a secret meeting here between the king and Jeremiah. Now in verse 16, you have the secret swearing of an oath that Zedekiah wouldn't have Jeremiah killed. And so it says, so Zedekiah the king swore secretly. He swore for himself, it says, unto Jeremiah, saying, As Jehovah lives, that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life, his soul life again. But the men wanted to put him to death, but he does this all, but it, again, it's something he does not out in the open, but he does it for himself, but he does swear by an oath, and the oath that he swears is by Jehovah. And that's what he says, as Jehovah liveth, that made us this soul. But he says he would not put him to death, and he wouldn't hand him back over to these men who were out seeking his life. And so he gives him his word. Now, again, he vacillates a lot, and we're going to see that he vacillates later on when it comes down to the after he hears what Jeremiah has to say. And so he puts it on Jeremiah to keep himself alive ultimately. But we'll see that later on. But as we look at verses 17 and 18, you have Jeremiah's prophecy, and then you have a discussion that goes on between Jeremiah and King Zedekiah. And as he comes into this prophecy, there are two different options that God has given. Jehovah gives two options to Zedekiah. And it kind of goes back to what the options were and the potential and the actual of what would take place over in verse 2 when Jeremiah had said, you stay, you're going to die, but if you go to Babylon, you'll live. And so this goes back to that thought, and it carries over to King Zedekiah. And so as we... And that's just what he'll say in verse 17. Then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, Thus saith Jehovah. Now it's interesting, he changes. Usually we see Jehovah Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts. You see him as the Elohim, the Lord of hosts, though Jehovah. But now he says Jehovah, the Elohim, the God of hosts, the one who's over, but he's the God over the heavenly armies. Sometimes we see where it's more common to see Jehovah Sabaoth instead of Elohim Sabaoth. But Jehovah is Lord, and then Elohim God, but he is Sabaoth over the hosts. And so hosts, he's over the hosts of heaven, the heavenly hosts, the heavenly armies. And so, but it's this one who's over all of the heavenly spirit beings. He says the God of Israel. He's the Elohim of Israel, as opposed to the gods that these people have been accustomed to worshiping. But he is, and Jeremiah, as we've gone through Jeremiah, oftentimes refers to Jehovah in this way. But he is the God of Israel. If thou wilt assuredly, when he says this, if you will absolutely go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, unto his officials, then thy soul shall live. And so he's going to live if he will willingly go forth. And notice, not only that, he can spare the city. So here's a potential. And this is what he could do. If he doesn't, if he just goes out willingly, goes to Babylon as a prisoner, he'll survive. And this city shall not be burned with fire, and thou shalt live in thine house. And so he and his household would all live if they just go down to Babylon, if he just goes down with the king, with Nebuchadnezzar's officials and goes to Babylon willingly. He can preserve his house, he can preserve the city, and it won't be burned. But then you have the second option. And you have a choice now for Zedekiah to make. But if thou wilt not go forth to the king of Babylon's princes or officials, then shall this city be given into the hand of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou, emphatically, shall not escape out from their hand. And so if you don't go with them, if you resist, what's going to happen? Well, you're going to go into captivity anyway, and the city's going to be burned. But if you go willingly, the city will be spared, you'll be spared, your household will be spared. The choice is up to him. Now, we saw that back in 2 Kings 24 when we introduced our lesson this morning, when we went back there, we saw that when Zedekiah, when he after he did that which was evil in the eyes of Jehovah, in the sight of Jehovah, what did he do? He rebelled for his whole rule in Jerusalem. So he did rebel against the king of Babylon. And so that's going to set up the next chapter where we see that the choice, he has the choice, either go and live, preserve the city, stay, the city is going to be destroyed, you're going anyway. So he could have gone easily, but he's going to make the choice. Now that is the potential and the actual, and God would have spared the city of Jerusalem if Zedekiah had done as the first option, according to the first option. But he didn't, and so the second option became the actual and was the actual, and we're in Jeremiah 38. And so he's not going to do so. Now if Zedekiah, again, he's really just this weak person, a weak king, and just very weak need. And so the reason that he gives for to Jeremiah, he has his response to Jeremiah and essentially to Jehovah, and the two options is given in verse 19. And Zedekiah the king said unto Jeremiah, I am afraid of the Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans, lest they deliver me into their hand, and they mock me. Now, when it says, unless they mock me, they treat me cruelly, it would have is the idea. But if they mocked him, they'd treat him cruelly. And so he's concerned about what will happen to him from the Jews who've already been taken into captivity. Now, those who were taken into captivity already would be Jeconiah, his nephew, who had reigned briefly before him, and the Jews and some of the best trained and most and the people who were of importance in the city, they might he's afraid of what their response might be to him at this point. And so Jeremiah goes ahead and he explains now down through verse 23. He explains the options to Zedekiah once more. But Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver thee. And so they're not going to hand you over to the Chaldeans. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of Jehovah, which I speak unto thee. So it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. So all you have to do is just do what I say. They won't do anything to you. Your excuse, his excuse was nothing but a weak excuse. It had nothing, there was nothing to it. And Jeremiah assures him of that, and still he can't make a good choice when it comes down to what he's going to do. And so, but you will live. Now, as we go on to verses 21 through 23, we see the consequences, though, given by Jeremiah. But if thou refuse to go forth, this is the word that Jehovah hath showed me. And so this is what's going to happen now if you don't go. And behold, all the women that are left in the king of Judah's house, and presumably from the way he says it, there were many, shall be brought forth to the king of Babylon's princes or officials. And those women shall say, thy friends have set thee on, or the men of peace have set thee on and have prevailed against thee. Thy feet are sunk in the mire, in the mud, and they are turned away back. So what's going to happen as they bring these women out of the king's house, so shall they bring out all thy wives and your sons, the word children as sons, to the Chaldeans. And you, emphatically, shalt not escape out of their hand, but shall be taken by the hand of the king of Babylon, and thou shalt cause this city to be burned with fire. So just as he said back in verse 2, this was what would happen. The city's going to be burned. So Jerusalem is about to go down. And so the northern kingdom, it's been in captivity for a long time. And the fall of Jerusalem and the southern kingdom is about to take place. And the whole nation of Israel, both kingdoms, are going to end up in captivity. and you go back to some of the curses back in Deuteronomy 26, 27, 28, 29. You have a bunch of curses, and part of it is they would be taken away if they served other gods, if they did not worship Jehovah and serve Him, they would be removed from the land. And there was a promise of land. Well, if they didn't do as He said within the land, if they polluted the land, well, He would just take the land away from them, or take them away from the land. And so they were removed into captivity. And so this is what these were the options that were set before Zedekiah. And not only would he but his and his household be taken, but Jerusalem itself was going to be burned. And so that's going to be the case. Now, by the time the Lord Jesus comes on the scene, Jerusalem has been rebuilt, and the governments have changed. You do have Herod's temple in the city. Solomon's temple was stripped at this time, and it's gone. But Herod would rebuild it, and you would have the Jews living in the land again, coming with the returns from Babylon. But as we see here, this is on the verge of where they're going to be the choice. Really, the choice of what's going to happen to Jerusalem rests upon the shoulders of King Zedekiah. And so here you have one of the most wimpy of kings. He's afraid of the people, what might happen if he does do as Jehovah has said. And so that brings us down to verses 24 through 28. And as we come to these verses, we see the sparing of Jeremiah's life, but he's still sent back to prison. And Zedekiah does request for Jeremiah not to tell anyone about what has transpired between them now. And again, that shows you how weak he is, because he doesn't want it to get back to the leaders, to the officials who were under him in his court, and yet he doesn't want it to come back to them. And so this, again, it has nothing to, he's preserving his own reputation, his own hide, whatever. But he wants Jeremiah to keep still. And so then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, let no man know concerning these words, that, and thou shalt not die. And so he promised him back in verse 16 that as Jehovah lives, that is, that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life. So now what's he going to do? He says, let no man know of these words. So now it's up to Jeremiah, and thou shalt not die. So now it's kind of, he puts it on Jeremiah not to speak about what has taken place. So he instructs Jeremiah what he's to say or what he isn't to say. And there's the potential that the princes might hear that Jeremiah and Zedekiah have had this meeting and have had this little talk between them. And so they might want to know what's going to happen, and they do. And so Zedekiah, he knows these men. And so he says in verse 25, but if the princes hear that I have, or the officials hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king, hide it not from us, and we will not put thee to death. Also what the king said unto thee. And so they want to know, and so that's if that happens. And so Zedekiah, he really is pretty weak, because he doesn't want these men to hear the discussion that's taken place. And again, the choices are all resting on Zedekiah's shoulders. And so the potential and the actual is there. The potential, he could go into captivity and the city be spared, or he can rebel against Nebuchadnezzar, and the city will be destroyed. There will be a lot of death, and also he will be taken to captivity anyway. And so that's the choice that Zedekiah has, but he doesn't want Jeremiah to let anyone know what has been said. And so he tells him how to respond, tells Jeremiah how to respond if they do come and speak to him. Then thou shalt say, verse 26, say unto them, I presented my supplication before the king that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. Now, that wasn't exactly what they talked about, so he kind of encourages them not to tell exactly what took place. Kind of bend the truth, it sounds like, a little bit there, and maybe a lot. But he once tells him to tell him that he was there to try to preserve his life. And so this actually happens as we come to the 27th verse. You do have the approach of the officials to Jeremiah to ask him what transpired between he and the king. Then came all the princes unto Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. So Jeremiah tells him what he was told to tell him, and he was just asked the king not to be sent back to the place where he would die. So notice they left. Left off speaking. They were silent from him, it says, for the matter was not perceived. So they didn't pick up on what the king and Jeremiah had discussed at all. And so anyway, they left Jeremiah be anyway. So notice what happens to Jeremiah at the end of the chapter. So Jeremiah abode in the court of the prison, that is, in the court of the guards. He abode there until the day that Jerusalem was taken. And so Jerusalem is on the verge. They've been besieged by Nebuchadnezzar and his armies. And Zedekiah, instead of going forth and going with them to Babylon and sparing the city and sparing lives, he's going to resist them. He does it because he's afraid of what they might say and what they might do to him down in Babylon. And so he's not going to give in to do what Jehovah had told him he needed to do. And so really it's the potential and the actual. It comes down to it. It rested upon the shoulders of this weak king. And he's going to cave, and he's not going to do what Jehovah tells him to do. And so he was there in Jerusalem until Jerusalem was taken, and he was there when Jerusalem was taken. So when Nebuchadnezzar came and took over the city of Jerusalem, here is Jeremiah still there in the court of the prison. Now following this, when we get into chapter 39, we do find a description of the taking of Jerusalem. And as we look at this chapter, we see that Zedekiah, he could have made out a lot better had he just paid attention and been obedient and done as Jehovah has suggested that he do. But instead, he faces some horrible things before he's taken off into captivity. And we'll save that for next week. I will say, though, that he could have seen a lot better had he been obedient. But he's going to have his eyes taken out. And he's also going to have the last thing he's going to see are his sons being slain. And so all he had to do was do what Jehovah said, but he was unwilling, and he, for very weak reasons, he vacillated a lot, but it's also going to cost himself and the Jews who were yet in Jerusalem, it's going to cost them a lot of pain and a lot of destruction, and the city will be burned. And so that's the next things, the things we'll come to as we move on, Lord willing, next week. Now, as it goes on, Nebuchadnezzar is going to appoint a governor after Zedekiah, and Jeremiah, we'll see that Jeremiah is going to remain in Jerusalem and in Judah. He was preserved from going down, and Nebuchadnezzar's people, they preserve him from going down into Babylon and into captivity with the rest of the nation. But Jeremiah, he suffered, but God had more work for him, and God spared him. And God did give a choice to the king, and the king had a choice. And as so often is the case, the king made the wrong choice and rejected Jehovah's word that could have been a preservation, at least of the city. And so with that, we started about this time, so an hour ago, so we'll stop at this point now. Let's go ahead and look to the Lord. Father, we're thankful again for your word, even as we look at these things in the Old Testament that don't tell us how to live, that we don't live by these things, and they don't really have an application when it comes down to us as church saints. But we're thankful again as we look at these things, as you dealt with men during the Old Testament times, that you did give them the potential. You had things that you wanted them to do, just as you do for church saints today. And they had choices to make, and we have choices to make as to what we do. And here an unbelieving king had opportunity but failed to do so. And yet your prophet, he was faithful in doing what you sent him to do in spite of all of the persecution and all of the ways that he was abused. We're thankful again that he did those things in according to what you sent him to do. And again, as he did those things, we're thankful that as the pre-incarnate Son of God met with him and talked to him and told him the things to prophesy, we're thankful that even as close a relationship as he had at that time to a personal contact, that we today are blessed in the fact that we do have a relationship, a personal relationship with each person of the Godhead 24 hours of the day, that we can't get rid of our relationship to you, the Son, or the Holy Spirit. And so we're thankful again for your provisions under grace. Amen.